Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, you like professional wrestling? We like professional wrestling too. This week in the news, Ryan Nemeth sues AEW in the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Our thoughts on Elimination Chamber, which just ended very recently. And Invader Club, Joe Malenko and Tsuyoshi Kikuchi versus the Fantastics from All Japan Pro Wrestling. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. We are coming about, say a half hour after Elimination Chamber has ended. And the funny thing is, like, my co-host on the other show and, like, Dave Meltzer and others in the podcasting world this week, you know, it's WrestleMania. Doesn't feel as hot as other weeks. And then we end with what I thought was a great angle, where John Cena is now The Rock's corporate champ. He's going heel for this last run. Something I never thought we'd see. So there has to be a redemption story in the next 9 months, right? He goes heel and then, like, he fails and then Rock turns on him and we get, like, Rock Cena for the final time. Does that sound about right to you?
I don't know, because it's like, maybe he does win the 17th championship, but it's as a heel.
That's possible too.
And then maybe he redeems himself by losing the title and shaking hands
to Cody or something again. Okay. Yeah. I could go with that. I mean, see, I just don't know. I don't know.
I'm just interested is how far are we taking John Cena? Are we going Walter White with this guy?
We're not going Thuganomics, I don't think, but
no, I want him in a suit. I want him to be Heisenberg.
You want him to be like Flair? That's what he's going for. He's going for this. He's going for the 17, number 17. And I don't know how bad he wants to break Flair's record, because before he said, I'm fine with Flair still having the record this whole time. He seems.
I'm guessing there's maybe an ambivalence to that now as time elapses.
I'm sure WWE.
He's not going to say it out loud, but I'm sure WWE is ambivalent to keeping that record as well.
Well, I know that, yeah, well, I'm sure WWE wants to take that little piece of sirloin off of other companies' plates and now put it in theirs and say, okay, our guy is the guy who held the title the most, as opposed to Flair, where it's kind of an amalgam of different companies and really kind of tells the history of wrestling in some ways between the NWA and WWE and WCW and whatnot, but right. I kind of enjoyed that entire pay-per-view. I thought there were a couple things that were a bit hinky, but overall, I mean, that was a fun watch for me, and I thought especially the women's Elimination Chamber was quite good.
Okay, like, if you are just tuning in for WrestleMania season and this was your on-ramp, one of the best on-ramps they've had in years.
Yeah.
Elimination Chamber has had the propensity to be ho-hum, and changing the format for the men's chamber to be the determiner of who is facing Cody ipso facto, who is in the world title main event, is something that freshens up Elimination Chamber and makes it a more relevant pay-per-view. You might have felt like Jey Uso winning the Rumble was a little bit of a letdown, but he benefits from being a Rumble winner. And then Elimination Chamber benefited from being the actual determiner of who's really the number one contender for the main belt.
And it really had, I mean, it had former world champions with the exception of Logan Paul, who, when he grabbed the American flag, I go, oh, he's such a flawed hero, but he's the hero we need right now. Because those boos were fantastic, and yeah. I loved every minute
of it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I get that. I overall, though, it's one of those things because Elimination Chamber is also one of my least, or it used to be at least, one of my least favorite gimmick matches because now they've safened it up for people. And I say this every year, because I remember watching those first Elimination Chambers.
Oh, the outside of the ring.
Where you had the grates on the outside and would tear up your back every time you fell on it or whatever. And I still remember that as I watch these matches. And it's not like, I mean, God bless her. I will no longer put conditions on this. Liv Morgan is a hell of a wrestler. Not saying she's a great wrestler. I'm not saying All Japan Women early 90s.
No, she's a hell of a storyteller, though.
Oh, she had a great night, I thought, in that thing. I mean, yeah, she to the point where I want her to have her Mania match next year. I think if she keeps this up, she deserves it. I think the story coming out of the women's Elimination Chamber, The Jade Naomi spot I loved, but I still think there's some story to be told there. I think Bianca did it still.
No, what was terrible was I watched a little bit of the post show presser with Bianca, and they did not give her good direction at all. Yeah, or she just seemed real confused. Or, to your point, this really is a double cross, and she did it. And then that press conference makes all the sense in the world.
It feels like this is that turning Bianca is a way to get her not cheered against Rhea.
That's true, right?
And I think there's going to be, God, there's going to be a lot of screaming within social commentary Twitter about turning Bianca heel against Rhea. If you're catching the subtext.
Yeah, no, especially with having all three of Naomi, Jade, and Bianca fighting amongst one another.
Yes.
The optics
that
of
too.
That don't look great.
Yeah. Especially on March 1st. but overall, I mean, that women's match, I also thought Becky was going to come out. I did. I thought they were taking out Naomi so that Becky Lynch could come in and win it all. But I'm kind of happy they didn't. I thought Bayley had a decent night. I thought everybody, I mean, Roxanne Perez, it's so weird watching her and Alexa because they're both so tiny. And boy, those two and Liv catching Bianca jumping off that pod, I was like, good God, that's some physicality. That's like watching Tiffany do the moonsault last year off the top of the pod. But what were your thoughts on the women's match?
I thought in particular Liv and Bianca were excellent with one another.
Yeah.
Those two really had a nice breakout level up moment for me where I was watching the show and I was thinking, man, I'm watching an Elimination Chamber match with Liv Morgan and Bianca Belair, and they're actually really carrying this.
Yes.
And the company is trusting these two to carry the story. And that felt like a breakthrough moment for both of them. They've had lots of nice moments along the way here. Both of them, of course, have been champions. Both of them have had like the little Mania moments and that sort of thing. But this was them carrying the middle of the show and being trusted to be the anchor of a match. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would push back a little bit on Bianca because I think her coming out was the Sasha match at Mania that one year. I think this was Liv's real, I can carry this as the heel and do the storytelling with the faces within there.
When's the last time Bianca's kind of been?
That's true. She's been on the shelf for a bit.
It's been a minute though, right?
Yeah.
It's been a minute. And yes, she did, but that was okay. She had to do that with Sasha though, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, yeah, she's doing that with Sasha. This is Bianca and Liv. Who's the better of the two of them? Not entirely clear, but they're both good enough that they can carry the moment. And I think that's a real compliment on both of them.
Yeah, I would agree. I thought Alexa did good character work, but I hate this gimmick.
Quinn,
I like
this
her.
Harley Quinn derivative crap is boring. It's like every third female wrestler these days does some variant of Harley Quinn, and I'm over it.
Kind of like when AEW had three people with Joker gimmicks.
Yes, yes, right. We need new characters, people.
There's more characters in DC than just the Joker and Harley Quinn. Somebody do a Captain Cold gimmick, for God's sakes. The tag match was next with Trish and Tiffany Stratton against Nia Jax and Candice LeRae. Candice, ever the professional. I'm so happy she's at least surviving on the main roster, given that, you know, she was kind of brought up with nothing, and, you know, she was kind of put into this. And I said,
I want to talk Nia Trish real quick here, because this is the roughest patch of the match here for me. And I think Nia needs to tell Trish, lay it in and make it look believable, because if you don't at least throw some hip into those kicks and throw a little bit of heft into those forearms, the offense against me is not going to look like it registers. When Trish was trying to do her kicks and punches on Nia, she was holding back and playing it safe in a way that Austin would have pulled her aside and been like, work, Snug. She needed to stiffen it up. And Nia needs to tell women the size of Candice LeRae or Trish Stratus, hey, look, I can handle taking a chop. Hit me.
Yeah. The chops were great when Trish was laying those in to Nia. Those were good.
I think she realized she was going like pseudo karate on Nia initially, and that's when she kind of ramped it up a little bit for those chops, because they did look a little bit better and a little bit snugger.
And I absolutely screamed on that spot where Nia rammed Trish's head into the turnbuckle with that kind of that whip around thing, where it looked like her head just hit the metal at first, but it missed it. That said, how in the blue hell do you book Trish Stratus in Toronto and not have that bulldog off the top be the pinning maneuver? Why does Tiffany Stratton need the pin in a match that's basically... See, I think it's going to be Trish and Nia at Mania. I think they're going to be like mid-card of one of those matches or one of those nights or something. But at the same time, I'm like, if this is Trish's last big match in Toronto, which it probably should be, give her the pin. I didn't understand that at all.
I agree. I just think, you know, with these part-timers, now you see the talent level among the main working roster is just so much elevated, because like Trish, Cena, they all look slow and like they're working. I mean, you know, even compared to like Punk, who's on the roster every week and doesn't even wrestle every week, but like, you know, is doing stuff every week on a more active basis. You got to use these guys in little drips and drabs, in dosages, and in feel-good moments like giving Trish Stratus the pin in her hometown. And that helps Tiffany Stratton more than anything else you could do in this match. Tiff celebrates with Trish that she won, and they hug. And, like, you know, Tiffany is basically happy to see Trish Stratus, you know, win. That's a good thing for her.
Yeah, I think the problem here is we've been bringing Trish back every year for like the last 4 years, and it's not as special. And now we're starting to see the decline. It was nice that her kids were there to watch the match. That's why I thought you should give her the pin. But you know, it was cromulent. I wouldn't call it really good. But and then we get to something that was absolutely sublime, which was the Kevin Owens Sami Zayn match.
Boy.
Whew. Whew. This was violence on violence on violence, and then they kicked out of the violence, and then they went back to the violence. There was that, I think it was first used in Ring of Honor and then brought over to NXT, where it says they're destined to fight forever. I'm fine with that. If every match is like this, I'm fine with it. They can have, dare I say, do we make this a three-way for Mania with Randy Orton, who returned tonight?
That could be fun.
Yeah, Orton is just so gigantic now, but, they brought out tables stacked on one another. They brought out a barbed wire covered chair. They kicked out of the barbed wire covered chair. They hit him again with the barbed wire chair. Eventually this is stopped, which is just ridiculous. That's my issue with this whole thing, is it was stopped by WWE officials when it was an unsanctioned match. So if it's unsanctioned, the hell are all the goon squad doing out there? This is where you give these ideas to try and get around the stipulations, and it sounds good in the room, and then you perform it, and it's just, no, that's stupid.
No. Unsanctioned should have been the blow off for this at Mania. They went one beat too early here. This match should have been a no disqualification match and it should have gone to this level of extreme, to the point that Adam Pearce and Nick Aldis, we cut to them in the back and they go, no, this is going too far. I know it's a no disqualification match, and Aldis and Pearce are like talking, and we don't know what they're talking about at first. Then they finally come out and stop the match after Kevin Owens hits the third ref with the burning hammer or whatever, right? You get to the unsanctioned match at Mania. You shouldn't have done it here. I think that's the mistake. Well, I like the stoppage angle. And I like the stoppage angle as a way to get to an unsanctioned match.
No, this is the unsanctioned match.
I know. I'm okay. Aware oh, of that. Okay. I'm saying that they should
okay,
have.
Okay, okay.
Right.
Okay.
Well,
it sounded like you were saying, okay, we need. Well, never mind. I thought this should have been the main event because it was in Canada and it was two Canadian wrestlers. But obviously, because of the Rocks angle, you couldn't do it that way. If it's unsanctioned, nobody should be coming out other than,
not even
another referee, because we've washed our hands of the violence that's going to happen here.
This match should have been the setup for the unsanctioned match.
Yeah, no, I agree. Now, I agree with that. Yeah. Lil Nate's taking a hell of a clothesline there, too.
Oh my God. Charles Robbins is like what, almost 60, and he just took that lariat like nobody.
Oh, he's over 60, I believe. I think he's. Yeah. I think he's 61 or 62. Don't get me wrong on that, but yeah. I couldn't get behind, like, you know, you had Shane Helms, you had Jason Jordan, you had all the agents out there. I was like, why are they out there? We turned the lights off. This is lights out, unsanctioned. We are not responsible for the violence that happens. And then all of a sudden, we're worried about the violence. All right, whatever.
Also, a lights out match should technically take place after, like, you know, they have like the little credits thing where it's like Paul Levesque and Leving or whoever the other
Lee
guy.
Lee Fitting, yeah.
Lee
yeah.
Fitting, right? Yeah, like run that. And then do the blackout and then do the match. So
yeah,
you've hit the credit thing and you can do the blackout and it basically make it feel more unsanctioned.
They that for either an AEW match or a NXT match.
I think they did it with the AEW match. Like, I think that makes sense. I think that's a good move.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on the men's chamber? I thought it felt rushed. Especially for some reason, like, Drew's elimination felt quicker than it should have been to me, but I guess the surprise was part of the thing.
Yeah. I mean,
Logan didn't get to do too much.
No, he was and a red herring.
Yeah.
I actually think his deployment as red herring in this match was good. Cause even though he didn't seem like he was going to win in the lead up to this, the idea of Logan Paul versus Cody Rhodes is not an impossibility. And you could also see him being involved in the finish of this match. And now, I really like the finish of this match because now Seth Rollins is going to have to deal with the moral reckoning of empowering John Cena, and Cody Rhodes is going to confront him over that. That, like,
that's,
you know,
true. I didn't realize. Yeah, that. I mean, it brings into clarity that it's Punk and Seth at Mania.
Yes.
But at the same time, it's like Cody going to Seth and going, well, if you hadn't done that to Punk,
right,
we wouldn't be in this mess right now.
And I mean, similarly, Jey Uso and Jimmy Uso are also going to have complicated feelings about the final boss aligning himself with John Cena and not necessarily thrilled about Seth Rollins. I really like this finish between Rollins, Punk, and Cena. It was really good because there are lots of storyline implications for all three of them. And one thing that WWE has been doing such a great job of in the wake of Vince McMahon leaving has been building a sustaining universe where events happen and the events have implications that ripple. Like, every event is like a rock being tossed into a pond with ripples that stretch out, rather than on AEW television where stuff just happens from week to week.
And then the angle happens. Cody coming out, shakes Cena's hand. Cena's acting career has helped him so much because he sold this so well. And then the turn to stone face when he's in the embrace of Cody and Rock gives the slit across the throat. I also was not expecting the Cody F-bomb drop. I thought that was effective use of the main event swear word.
I agree.
In a way that I was not. I was like, wow. And of course, Cole then drops an S-bomb on commentary during the beatdown. I kind of like that, too, that he's getting so angry at this that he kind of loses his focus on being the quote-unquote character of Michael Cole. But
well, I mean, here's the thing, too. John Cena played him, and they did a really nice job of this because Michael Cole was going to Cena's defense about the post-Royal Rumble press conference where he said that he just deserved to be in the Elimination Chamber, and he didn't stay neutral.
Yes.
Cole chose to go partisan and actually defend John Cena and be like, John Cena did deserve this. He's a great man. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, he went out for his
Yeah, he went out on a limb for John Cena, and John Cena broke the branch on him. So I like the idea of Cole feeling that betrayal, too.
Well, what's great then, and this is what I brought up to you on the pre-show, is on SmackDown during that promo, Drew McIntyre was talking about, you know what, John, you always knew how to play politics when I was a young kid, and that's why I was so scared of you. I was scared of you because, and now I'm no longer scared of you. But basically, Drew came out and basically told you what John Cena was, and he is still the asshole with a point, which he plays this to a T. Because he's never quite a heel and he's never quite a babyface. He's just a guy that's been screwed over and over and over again.
Yeah, he's out of control of his emotions, but like part of the reason he's out of control of his emotions is because he keeps getting screwed and he does kind of see things clearly.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of the madness of the person who sees things clearly but nobody else does going on with Drew McIntyre.
It's like he's a conspiracy theorist, but he's right, and he can't get anybody to see his point of view. It's like, can't you see? The Bloodline has done this to all of us, and we can't, you know, that kind of thing. And everybody's like, no, it's because you're a jerk, Drew.
He is like the Frank Grimes of WWE.
Yes. Oh, you brought that up before, I think. I need that as his gimmick is. Can't you see? Seth Rollins has terrible taste in fashion.
He dresses like an asshole because he is an asshole.
Yes, exactly. And his wife probably dresses him because she's an asshole.
And now look at the back. He did stuff because he's a self-obsessed asshole. Like, if he can't get over himself, which you could tell because of the way he dresses. And look, to my point, he's an asshole.
Elton John thinks he's being too flamboyant. All right? Come on. Okay, that'll wrap up Elimination Chamber. We'll have other stuff in the Lazy River, but a few news bits and bites. Ryan Nemeth, who currently wrestles for TNA, after spending years generally as an enhancement wrestler in AEW, filed suit against the company, Tony Khan, and Phil Brooks on February 14th in Superior Court in Los Angeles. Nemeth, 40, is suing on grounds of assault, breach of contract, breach of implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing, and international interference with prospective advantage. This is Dave Meltzer writing about it. I like this, though. This is his analysis. I think the key here is that in following this story from the start, Nemeth was wronged in the sense that he ran afoul of Brooks, leading to a confrontation between the two. That is true. Because he was not a star, he wasn't booked for months after, and then when finally, due to pressure from friends that his not being booked was unfair, and he was booked for a collision taping, Punk saw him before the show, and then he got a message from producer Pat Buck to not go to the building. Those are all true. And then you get into the actual filing, which says, oh, Tony Khan loved CM Punk. Oh, he was just absolutely devastated. That was his boy. It's one of the worst written. It's written by a guy who didn't know what was going on, but took the case maybe on consignment in hopes of money, and then Googled a bunch of stuff. That's
right.
What it is.
or did not do any real deep homework on the defendants beyond the idea, the basic notion that the defendants in this case are more or less people who generally work together and don't have any major rifts between one another.
He got he got dates wrong of like the fights and stuff like that backstage. Which
outstanding
just like,
stuff. Outstanding stuff.
Oh, indemnify was the word I was looking for when I was talking about WWE and Johnny in terms of they are aligned, I believe. I think I think Johnny still has his own defense, so to speak, but for those who are yelling at the old and whatever podcast device of choice you had, yeah, that was the word I was looking for. Anyways, a couple contracts expiring this week.
Save big money on your next project at Menards. Add a classic look and privacy with faux wood room darkening blinds by Window Images. They're available in a variety of colors and can be trimmed with for free in store. Stop in today and get Window Images faux wood blinds on sale now through March 9th. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Layla Hirsch will not be re-signed by AEW. She had been doing some pretty decent work in Ring of Honor. Had a couple of really good bangers with Diamante down there, but they just never brought her back to the quote-unquote main roster. And then Carmella was moved to the alumni section of the WWE website. And in a signing, your boy Elias, now known as Elijah, is with TNA now. Any thoughts on that?
I am glad to see Elijah back doing something. I think he's a solid character act, and he's a guy who can definitely help anchor the middle of a show.
Layla Hirsch, I think she's probably going to end up in TNA with the ex-Xia Li is actually facing, I think, Tessa Blanchard for their title over there. She seems like the type that TNA would pick up for a minor run. I would love to get her into the NXT thing and team her with someone like Kendall Gray and just have a couple of small grapplers who are doing that gimmick, kind of like the Creed brothers were when they were NXT, but for
bring
women.
Bring her up with Ivy Nile. Have her join right up with the Gable Stable.
Yeah, because the Gable Stable needs all the help they can get.
I agree. They certainly need something other than jokes on top of jokes in place of a gimmick.
They have nothing with them, and I couldn't believe it because they seemed ready made to do like Varsity Club with them.
Right, you have like so much talent, and like they can't do anything with these four people. It's crazy.
Carmella, I think Carmella was fine. She was solid at times. She was quite good at times, to be honest, and she was great at the character stuff, like that whole thing with was it James
Yeah, no chin guy.
The no chin guy who got in a little trouble.
Yeah, no, he's not a good guy either. Yeah, the no chin guy. Yeah, yeah. But like that, I mean, she did a bunch of stuff, and she certainly outkicked her coverage. Right?
Yeah.
They thought she was just going to be basically the spare part from the Enzo and Cass experiment, and she ends up really building her own career for a bit in the middle of the decade there, 2013, 2014, 2015. She was doing some stuff.
Yeah, she's still recovering from some medical stuff, as I recall, which makes it kind of unusual. But the contract expired, but I guess no medical time or anything is going to be like added on or anything like that. But yeah, that'll end our news segment. Now to the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we had time for. Where we got to, and I thought
basically all we have left at this point is Dynamite, right?
Well, NXT, if you wanted to do that. I mean, all the shows were kind of solid this week, I thought, because I'll give a list of things I thought were solid, and I'll tell you. But before I do that, Twitter had no problem with our beta male conversation. Blue Sky, on the other hand. Hey, you know what an alpha male is.
Wait. I mean, because I can look at things like,
yes.
Even if the contention there is a veiled insult that I am not an alpha male, one, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Two, I have watched enough TV, read enough books, met enough people who are alpha males,
yes.
like, you know, like chads, if you will, badasses, if you like. It really doesn't matter what word it is. They exist in life. And if you're not sure about this, if you're agnostic on this one, you're leading a sad life, a blind life. Because they are certainly out there, and they can be seen with your eyes.
I mean, you know who's taking charge and who's whining. I mean, that's all my point was, really. And coming in with a hybrid truck with a pair of stuck-on antlers wasn't exactly alpha thing, but I thought they did okay with the angle this week up until...
These nerds have never seen an episode of MacGyver in their life,
no.
And it's so obvious.
No, they did better. Like, look, both MJF and Adam Page got some manliness back, which I liked. I mean, don't get me wrong. My problem with the angle is still that Christopher Daniels is the emotional fulcrum of this thing, and God bless him. Why didn't they do a pre-tape of Daniels getting already beat up?
Horrible manager Christopher Daniels, who punches himself in the head.
In the head. And again, it's like, oh, he was his mentor. Yeah, well, then he shouldn't have put him out of wrestling. How about that? You know, I'm still fixated on that. And it's going to be a redemption story, and I'm not going to buy it. I'm sorry. That's just my opinion. You guys can disagree. Just don't get nasty with me on social media. That's all I ask. I mean, it's an opinion. Ignore it if you don't like it. Good.
Boy, is it telling, though, what it's like. I don't have a quote with the timestamp, but I certainly have an invective or a diagnosis about your masculinity or your mental sanity in the DSM-5.
Why are your takes so bad all the time? It's all right. Go find somebody else with better takes than me. Okay, I'm just doing a show and I'm telling you my opinion. And I happen to be a little bit different than everybody else, and I happen to be a little bit smarter than everybody else. I'm sorry I say that, but it's true. I like Adam Page. Well, that's a great opinion. Now let's do some story analysis of him. The things I liked the Hardys versus the No.
But to your point, real quickly,
ahead,
Jeff,
sorry.
Night and day here between like WWE and AEW, when we're talking about an event as an inflection
build.
Point.
Yeah.
Yes. Christopher Daniels managing of the company through 2024 means absolutely nothing now. It's just completely memory hold. That's not what we are to focus on. We are to focus on the fact that Chris Daniels and Adam Page have always been friends, and he's always been his mentor. And that fight that he did a couple of weeks ago where he beat the hell out of his mentor who he loves, which would actually be really troubling. Well, he's really troubled by that, so you don't have to be as troubled by that. This is not the same quality of build as what we just saw on Elimination Chamber with Seth Rollins, John Cena, and Cody Rhodes. That's an event that's going to have fallout that will make sense for months to come. Whereas AEW, I feel like every week I'm a bit of a blank slate. There's only the 2 weeks that preceded it, maybe.
And the thing that got me about this week's Dynamite was they brought back a bunch of acts that have been in Collision over on there, and they get no reaction on Dynamite because they've been on Dynamite, like the Outrunners. The Outrunners are over huge over in Collision land. They come on Dynamite, and everybody's just kind of like, huh. And they had kind of a bad match, I thought, against the Murder Machine tag team.
Oh, well, and Brian Cage. Boy, is that guy washed. Yeah. He's had multiple outings now where he has looked like he has lost two steps at least.
You know, I mean, I'll list the matches that I loved. I loved Hardy's No Quarter Catch Crew. I loved Carmen Petrovich and Stephanie Vaquer. I thought that was great. Moose and Lexus King brought something to the table this week. Jacob Fatu and Andrade, the tag team schmaz on SmackDown. Gunther and Tozawa on Raw. And Orange Cassidy and Takeshita to end Dynamite was fantastic too. It's just like Dynamite's thing was like, what the hell are we doing with Daniel Garcia again? We're beating him, and he's, I don't know if he lost the match tonight. I hope he didn't, but God, it's like, it feels like we have all these guys who are kind of in limbo and we never build them, but we have the other like five other people. The Edge angle I thought was decent, except for the, again, production. Don't film the concerto from a place where it's obvious you're not touching the guy. For me, like, out of all those, the one that stood out was I couldn't believe Carmen Petrovich was that good versus Stephanie Vaquer. I thought she had a hell of a night. If she could get some personality, she'll be something.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think the best case scenario at this point is that she gets fed up with Ashante and, like, or maybe turns heel on him and she just kind of solidifies being this mean little package.
Yeah, and back to Dynamite again. Orange Cassidy, again, a guy who hasn't been around a lot. They just kind of bring him back. And he's a guy that they should give him the big belt when he was red hot as the international champion. Have him drop that and just see what he can do as the face of the company, because he represents a lot of the fandom in the company in terms of their ironic detachment from wrestling. I think, you know, let's see where it goes. I was down for that, but now he's a guy who does great matches, but that aura kind of, I mean, you can get it back with him. It's easy with him because people love him so much.
You can, but they've had so many times to go all the way with this guy, and it does just feel like they've missed the boat on a number of times. I think he should be the guy fighting Moxley and not Adam Copeland.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, is this really, like, is Adam Copeland really the guy to go up against Moxley and the Death Riders?
It feels like Christian's cashing in that contract in LA to me.
Yeah.
And that we're going to go to Edge and Christian. Time on 150. And we'll see what happens there. The Hardys decided to de-age 20 years. That was nice of them. Did you see NXT?
Yeah, I did. I did see NXT. They certainly looked.
They looked better. I mean, they looked. It looked like Jeff had. No, never mind. I'm not going there.
Yeah, like Jeff. Jeff and I mean Matt in particular was very mobile, and I was
he dropped some weight, I think, too.
He dropped some weight, I guess, maybe some cortisone or something. I don't know.
Yeah, no, yeah, oh, that's right. He always was like kind of stiff and walking around, but if there's nothing you want to go to,
I mean, you know, it's like I really like Ariana Grace and Santino.
I've
kind of missed them on this show, and I certainly compared to friggin' Ava. Give me Santino and Ariana as like the anchor of the management on this show.
Ariana is such a perfect flake. as she is.
Yes, and especially in this new TNA NXT thing, having a father and a daughter fighting over company bureaucratic stuff, but also having father and daughter spats at the same time is perfect comedic fodder. And Santino and Ariana are perfect to pull that off. Like, they can do that really well. Let me see. Was there anything else here? You know, Dynamite. Like, just to kick it back to Dynamite here real quickly. I feel like Ricochet and Swerve, they ran out of story here. Like, we did basically the same story as we did last week in this build to this match.
A bit. I think there's some intrigue with the Nana thing where he's going to probably turn heel, which is fine. Ricochet is kind of finding himself, I think, as a heel.
I think he's kind of finding himself as a heel. I guess Nana turning heel and joining Ricochet would be a move.
I don't know if I agree with it, though. I mean, everything about Nana is the dance and the dumb coffee cup and stuff.
Right. Like, once you turn him to Ricochet's manager, then he's just like a Don Callis go away heel.
Yeah.
But I think it would be bad for Nana if he's trying to sell his coffee to turn heel inside. You know, I'm serious.
That coffee is overpriced. I don't think he's selling a whole lot of it.
Well, look, I mean, he's still trying to sell it.
I like the new look of the new, more serious Street Profits. I watched some of SmackDown while I was at the gym last night, and the problem is they are badasses, but they are absolute giants next to DIY and the Garzas, and actually Pretty Deadly is pretty tall, so at least they have some size there. Oh, and the Motor City Machine Guns. You know, it was a fun schmoz, but it was just like a bunch of tiny guys, and then here's this giant-ass Street Profits. Just it almost looked like another Fantastics match I watched this week, which was Stan Hansen and Butch Masters versus the Fantastics, and Stan Hansen just bodies both of the Fantastics. All over. It's a squash match to the point where Tommy Rogers is screaming at Stan Hansen, enough of this. It's just an absolute beatdown. Yeah, I don't have anything else on the Lazy. I mean, other than, you know, just giving props to people like Lexus King, who finally turned in a pretty darn good match against Moose. I'm liking this Madison Square Garden card. I know that they're rushing Vicaire and Julia, because one of them's a bit banged up, and I think it's Julia that needs to take some time off. You know, Hardy's versus Fraxium, here for that. Moose versus Oba. I love that stare down was good.
Could the Hardys actually turn in a good match with Fraxium's help at a major show? Because that would be a 2025 news event in and of itself.
I think if they come ready to feed Fraxium, yes. If they're there to do a Hardy Boys get over nostalgia match where they're doing their moves and Fraxium has to slow down for them, no. And if, look, and I'm not saying this to be mean, Jeff needs to be clear-headed and there for this match to really, really work. Cause you know, Nathan Frazier works too fast when he's in a big time match. He admittedly needs to slow down sometimes, but you know, he's going to be going at all cylinders, and Matt's usually ready for that stuff. It's Jeff. That's the one that's ill prepared at times.
Yeah. But you know, I'm ready for Jeff Hardy to finally get a taste of his own medicine of being the human body bag that has to just take the potato.
I hadn't thought about that, but you're actually right.
Yeah, you get to be the beanbag today, Jeff.
We can book him against Lady Frost, I guess, because Lady Frost sometimes just bodies people with those gymnastics. And I love Lady Frost, but if you're working her, good luck, man. Let's go to Vader Club. Joe Malenko and Tsuyoshi Kikuchi versus the Fantastics. I don't know if I butchered that last name or not, but Joe Malenko, I believe the older of the two Malenko brothers. There are some matches there. The Fantastics was something I was watching this week, And I was watching, I have a compilation of them in Japan, and they have some very interesting matches when they did excursions in Japan, one of which was against the British Bulldogs. I almost picked that one. And then I went into Hanson and Gordy versus the Bulldogs, which was also hell of a banger. That was towards the end of Dynamite Kid being Dynamite Kid. But the Fantastics kind of live in that space in wrestling history where they are the Alan Trammell to the Rock and Roll Express's Cal Ripken Jr. A great, you know, a great team that's slightly overshadowed by a more famous team, and both are very, very good, and both had great matches against the Midnight Express. I prefer the Fantastics matches against the Midnight Express rather than the Rock and Roll. I think the Rock and Roll Express do better against guys like the Andersons and stuff like that. But this was fun because the Fantastics work a little heel here, especially after Kikuchi slips off the ropes to do that, to do his springboard, and they cover with it. And the other reason I really, really liked this match is it goes to a complaint that I've been having about wrestling in general, in that these guys never did the whole, oh my God, he kicked out of a move. You know, that kind of melodrama. Every kick out, it's all right, let's keep working at it. They were constantly and constantly and constantly working for the pin here at a high clip. And boy, Tommy Rogers, that dude is just absolutely fantastic. Has crisp drop kicks. I remember seeing him at the end of his career in ECW, just basically doing jobs for guys, and it was kind of sad. He teamed with Jerry Lynn for a short time, but you could just kind of see his heart was in it. Like, but like the Fantastics, I mean, this is a match that's great, and it's kind of, it's a different side of the Fantastics. The matches to watch from them, if you've never seen them, Chris and I believe watched one of them. It was the one against Arn and Tully in Crockett Cup, I believe, 87. Or 86, I can't remember which year it was. It was one of those two. They have a great bloody brawl against the Sheep Herders, who are one of their better opponents. Fantastics versus Midnight Express, especially from Clash of the Champions 1. Joe and Dean Malenko have some sneaky great matches too, especially in the All Japan thing. I think the Malenko brothers only really, They appeared once at ECW, and they appeared once for one of those WCW, not the international tournament, but another tournament where they brought in a bunch of teams that weren't working under contract at the time. I like Joe Malenko a lot. He's not his brother, but he's still quite good. Any thoughts? And Kikuchi is just a mad. There are compilations of the Madman Kikuchi online. You can go watch those.
I enjoy this is one of my first Kikuchi matches.
This is mine first too, I believe.
Yeah, and he's a hoot. I like Malenko too. Yeah. I think Joe Malenko is different from Dean Bigger. I also like Joe Malenko's combination of like wrestling and kicking. It's
Yes,
his kicks are legit, and the wrestling and kicking, like shooter thing, is a different style that I actually struggle to kind of come up with a comparison to.
And like, this Fantastics was the kind of thing we talked about before, where you're still high flying, but you're trying to hurt people as a heel kind of a thing.
Yeah. But Joe Malenko's, I mean, like I'm watching this sequence right now. His Russian leg sweep looks excellent. He does a bunch of stuff really well.
Yeah, he does. There's a couple of matches. I think like the Malenko's versus, there's a Malenko's British Bulldogs one that's really, really good. Back when the Bulldogs did that run in, I think, 89 and 90, right after they had left the WWF.
Oh, there's the spot where they cover for Kikuchi when he slips off the ropes there.
Yeah. I forget you watch these as we're
so, oh, yeah. I watch them as you're talking about them. I watch my own as we're talking about them. It helps me think, like, what I like about this match or the work or whatever, because it's not like, unlike the rest of the show, right? It's not like I can actually have every single match on as we were sort of meandering between them. That would be, like, impossible to do in real time.
I think it's also one of those things where the Fantastics became outdated around 89 or 90, maybe 91. The Fultons were the Fantastics in Smoky Mountain. So if you see those matches, you know, Jackie Fulton is no Bobby Fulton, but they're doing the Beefcake Fabulous ones, you know, with the Fargo Strut. You know, the women are screaming and stuff like this. But the other thing that really amazed, this crowd gets into this match. Like, I mean, they are cheering, and especially when they do the, I think it's a elbow drop and then a rocket launcher, or elbow drop and then a splash from the top or whatever, and the Fantastics are just constantly going in and out and doing moves, and their working boots are on during this show. You can find this on YouTube. I also put it on the Shake Them Ropes X feed, and also in our Discord channel.
You know what their mistake was? In the 90s, as like wrestling trends and interests changed, and also the types of characters we like changed, these guys should have went heel. Like, these two like should have revamped their gimmick, because they were still athletic enough to do all these cool power moves and everything, and they could have slowed down their offense and worked against like Lucha Libre guys and that sort of thing.
Yeah, or
as
they
heels.
Or the thing was, they went their separate ways for a bit in 93, 94, and
yeah,
95. But you know what? They could have worked against the aging Rock and Roll Express.
Right?
Yeah, especially when you had split up like Richard Morton as part of the York Foundation and Robert Gibson was off doing whatever. I mean,
oh, I think they would have been good against a lot of these WCW Cruiserweight teams too. They would have been able to make a lot of them look good.
They were in there in the early, because you remember like 95 or 96 in Nitro, they were cycling in all the teams that they had. Like, they had the Rock and Roll Express there. They had Rogers and the
Taylor
had Fulton.
Came back
had,
for a second.
They had Marty Jannetty in there, and they were all facing the
Giant.
No. They were Barbarian and Haku.
Okay, they're fighting Barbarian Ming.
The
That's
Faces
right.
of Fear.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
we were getting those
and
guys
getting, and getting beaten. That's how they were getting over, was beating all these small, you know, quick teams before. I just put on there's on my Fantastics compilation in Japan. The first match is Jim Brunzell and Tom Zenk versus the Fantastics.
The Z-Man.
Personal connection to the Z-Man. I was friends with a family member of his. He was my in to shows in Virginia when he was with WCW. Couldn't have been a nicer guy. Really kind of missed that. I was trying to connect him with Conrad. Back in the day when Conrad and Shivani were making just Z-Man jokes all the time before he passed away, I was like, I could probably get you Tom Zenk if you wanted to. It's like, oh, we'd love to. And then unfortunately he passed away like 2 weeks later. So I was like, oh, okay, that interview won't be happening anymore. Any ideas where you're going with your Vader Club next week? What neighborhood we might be in?
I'm going to look up some Joe Malenko matches here. Okay. I actually am kind of interested to see Joe Malenko do something.
And that's part of the cool thing about Vader Club as well, is sometimes we'll just stumble onto something that we have no idea about and we'll just follow it. So, yeah, but let's end the show there. We hope you enjoyed Elimination Chamber. Next week, we'll do a preview of AEW Revolution from here in Los Angeles, California. Don't know if,
man, if you didn't enjoy Elimination Chamber, I don't know if wrestling's for you. Like, John Cena turning heel's about the biggest story you could possibly get in professional wrestling.
I wouldn't disagree with you there. But you can follow me on X at CrapGame13. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. I also do a show over on Fight Game Media called The Dynamite Show, about 20 minutes after Dynamite goes off the air. Paul Fontaine of Wrestling Observer and Figure Four and I go live on YouTube, and that drops in your podcatchers the next morning. It's basically thoroughly deconstructing the 2 hours plus of Dynamite. We enjoy the show. I hope you will too. Chris also has some plugs. He's going to tell them to you now.
Yeah, if you want music lessons, please go and follow me on Instagram, instagram.com/DOCTOR_NOV. Check out my music. It is Chris Novembrino on it on Spotify. I actually am working on stuff, so things might be. I know Who Wants to Ride a Bike is getting mixed down right now, and it will be out in like a final mixed and mastered form beyond what's on Instagram. And then I've got a bunch of other songs that I need to circle back to and kind of finish working on here. So new music is on the horizon, many of which is underway. If you like that kind of thing, and if you don't like that kind of thing, I don't care.
We'll see you next week.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.